amazing, do amazing. Live amazing, do amazing. So hello, and welcome to the Guided Disruption in the Workplace podcast. I am Anjali Mahajan, and we will be discussing today exponential technologies and their impact on the workplace. Joining us today is Yali Adamati, who is an expert in advanced technologies and has thought-provoking views on this topic. In this episode, we will explore how these technologies are impacting workplaces and what the future holds. So Yali, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved? What are the most impactful exponential technologies today?
So right now, the biggest one is AI, but we should take into consideration that 5 years from now is going to be quantum computers. And then like in 7-8 years, it's going to be synthetic biology. But right now is AI. AI is really, I think, it's the creation of alternative intelligence, not human intelligence, that can support us in our way of thinking and present us other ways to solve problems or to achieve our biggest dreams. So yeah, the reason is because it's a general purpose technology, meaning it's like a platform that many other technologies can benefit. So it's going to accelerate any kind of existing technologies. So anything we know about the world, we are going to reinvent the rules of physics, for example. Or just to give you an idea, we have like 37,000 materials which are known to the human species, but DeepMind created last year potential of 2.2 new million materials. And the fact that on the other hand, that the prices are simply exponentially dropping, it's dropping 90% a year. So the issue is like this, the story is like this, that the biggest or the strongest technology that was ever created is going to be in everybody's pocket.
How do you see the exponential technologies to influence the traditional company structures? Do you think that it will enable flatter organization?
I think that we're going to see flatter and flatter organizations. We are also going to be small. We're going to see smaller and smaller organizations. Within the tech industry, we are already speaking about the fact that the 1 trillion company was already created by one person with 2 employees. On the other hand, because I think so different than humans, just to give you an idea, in the Go AlphaGo game, which was the most important one in the history of games, the machine did a move which is being seen like a suicide. All the experts thought that the machine is broken or something is wrong with it. But because the machine can see 100 steps ahead, this is why she won. And we are incapable of seeing further than, let's say, 5-6. The other thing is that we need people. We will have a different kind of mentoring when the young people, the less experienced one, will have to mentor. So it's reverse mentoring. Once you have all the data in the world, and this is what we're going to have, so the issue is going to be how you ask very good questions. And we already know that good questions are being asked not by a single, you know, leader, but by a group. So in order to create the best question, you will have to work in a team. And once you're working in a team, the best team is going to be one which is, you know, crashing down the silo. Because any decision in the company is going to impact everybody. So we're going to see also the silo breaking. So if there is no silo, the source of, I think, of influence of the leader is also, you know, going to be very different.
I fully agree with you, Yali. I've been through reverse mentoring. We're trying reverse mentoring in Amdocs for the last few years. And I can tell you, I've gone through it and it's highly empowering and inspiring. But now let me ask you, what are the unintended consequences, especially from the adoption of these technologies at workplace?
The worst thing is the past is a very good prediction for the future. So you should have people who are not biased. And the only people who are not biased are not the people who are newbies, who don't have experience. So you will have to bring in young people and different people, You're going to have, you will have to have a diverse company. And you should bring in, you know, the less privileged ones so they will teach it. You will have to create communities of your clients which you work with and alter your products and services on a regular basis. Not to do, you know, a research, marketing research once in a month, once you want to launch a product or once a year in order to see what's happening to you, you know, monitor your brand. No, you will have to have the outsider voice all the time and you have to write the right infrastructure. Just to give you an example, when the traditional companies today are working on autonomous vehicles, they are bringing architects, they are bringing philosophers, they are bringing poets into the team. So people that, you know, you used to look at the resume and says, oh, he studied, I don't know, ancient history or, you know, philosophy, he is irrelevant. It's the opposite, because these are the people who are capable of thinking deeply about issues and they will come with creativity. When you're stuck in the same company for 30 years and you're doing a wonderful work, but if you want to do something to jump ahead, and you want the company to grow, no, not 5% or 10%, but 100%, you have to have a different mindset and a different capabilities. So it's all going to, and people don't think about it.
Amazing perspective. Having diverse mindsets, diversity of people, including poets and philosophers. So what steps should we take as organizations today to prepare for the changes?
Change means danger. So first of all, there is fear. And what is very interesting is that the immune system of a company is usually being operated by the best people who are totally loyal to the company and really want the best for the company, but they believe they know what it is. So if you really want to kill any kind of huge initiative, you get into the, as a CEO or a manager, and you get into the room and you say, wow, we are going to have a wonderful change. It's going to take a long time, a lot of effort, but it's going to be wonderful in the end. So first of all, you should tackle it. You should understand who are the stakeholders of the immune system and start working with them. This is the first, respect it and work with it. Once you're still working on it, create a strategy which is based on what we call zoom out, zoom in. This is what I do, is that you look out into the future, 5 years, 10 years. 5 years, in a sense, is even easier. So I would go for, if I want to have a real challenge, I says, let's say, look into the future 10 years from now, because it's very hard for people. So what's going to happen in our industry? And who are going to be our potential clients? And what are going to be their needs? And which needs we want to answer? And what should we do? And you come up with two initiatives, no more. You don't have to do, but it's colored. It's money that is colored. No one ever can touch it. And you're working on these two initiatives. Now, you don't do them in the core of the company. Because once the people who are representative of the immune system here, that you're doing inside in company, you're taking a lot of money, you know, a lot of resources, you're taking the best people. There is the story of Walmart. They had 5 different initiatives for 15 years inside the company to try to create a competitor to Amazon, and they all failed. The only time they were successful is when they took a small team of outsiders and they start working on it outside in what we call skunk work. What does it mean, skunk work? You take a small group of people. We call them architects of chaos. These are the people that when you get them into the room and you ask them, what do you think about the idea that everything you know about the world is wrong? Are you willing to challenge any kind of basic assumption that you have about life in general? And the ones that are smiling and happy, these are what we call the architects of chaos, because in each organization, we have survivor of chaos. So you take this group and you tell them, create a startup that is going to kill Amdocs. And they do it outside. When you get to a stage that it's really strong enough and it can stand on its feet, then you find a way to connect it. The other thing for the whole company, you start creating virtual sandbox. Because what's happening right now, people are sitting, they have a wonderful brainstorm, everybody have 15 good ideas, and then everybody is starting to argue why they shouldn't do these ideas. So what you do instead of it, using AI, you create virtual sandbox, digital sandbox to check any idea that you have. The statistics say that if you have any idea and you don't check it, your ratio of success is 2%. If you only try 20 times, you get up to 64% of success, potential success. So if you did like 30 times and with AI, because the price is dropping exponentially, you can do it like thousands of times over the weekend. And then you come back and then because the AI can think differently and she can hold like billions of point of views. So you have options and then you can try them in a small group, you know. And the other thing is I would totally change the way that you put your budget and in general, all your efforts regarding innovation. Because right now what people do is they put 70% in the core because this is where the money is coming. And you usually put 15% in adjacent spaces when you're saying, well, this is my capabilities. How can I go and disrupt other? But so sometimes it's successful, but usually they hardly put anything for the edges, something which is totally different. So just to give you a small example, you know, the year that Sassoon invented the, how do you call it, the digital camera, on the other side of the world, there was a small company called Fuji. So they were sitting there and people don't know, but at that same year, 76, if I'm not mistaken, 79, there was a shortage of copper. So no one could make the usual cameras. They didn't have the materials. So they said, what can we do? And then they started working on digital cameras. But then they said, think about it, 76 or 79, what if people will never ever want to use cameras? Because they're going to be something else. So this is, what do we know to know? What do we know how to do? We know how to do chemicals. So they started taking chemicals and they created a wonderful cosmetics company. And then they created, and people don't know it, a pharmaceutical company. And in the first month of the corona, the head of prime minister of Britain got a phone call from the head of Fuji, and he said, we have 200 dolls of special treatment for people with severe coronavirus. We are sending it to you. Fuji, which, yeah.
Amazing.
So just to give you this, yeah. And play all the time. People are afraid of technology. Whenever you're afraid of something, simply play with it. So I think you should have a play time. Play date in each company. Half an hour, let's play. Let's play with CRISPR. Let's play with 3D printing. Play with it.
That's a great segue into the next question, which is really the leadership, right? And how do you think these technologies are challenging the traditional leaderships, right? It's also what you mentioned, you know, where you invest, you know, how do you bring more to look from outside in to challenge your own thought process and the core values and the core.
I would break every big company to small companies. A wonderful company called Haier did it many years ago. And he had 50,000 people working for him and he created 5,000 small companies. And everybody in the small company has the capability to make decision. And if you have a good idea, they give you 7 people and you can go and buy and build a new company. And usually I think the company is growing on a regular basis, I think twice or three times more than all the competitors. And the revenues are much higher. And the profits is, I think, skyrocketing. So this is one option. This is a very radical one. Some professors in MIT are talking about the concept of HIPPO. HIPPO is the most high earning person in the room. And they're challenging it. They're saying right now, you have to start working with a team. The idea, I think only last month, a new book came out by Kit Farazi, a very good one. And he's talking about the fact that leadership is not anymore a sole person play. You have always to deal in a group. So I think this is very, very important. I think linear thinking is dead.
Can you, if you were to design an ideal organizational structure for exponential technologies integration, what would it look like?
I would like for a second to talk about two companies. Valve is a gaming company, which is more profitable than any other company on earth. They have only 300 people. And they believe that you should give people not only the responsibility, but also the authority. So if I'm working for Valve and I'm getting in the morning into the office and they have this big screen and new projects are written on it, and what? They're working on a game for disabled people. So I go and I negotiate with the manager and I says, listen, I'll finish this, but I want to move to the other group for 3 months. And symbolically, not only the chairs, but also the tables are on wheels. So think about how symbolic it is that I'm moving my table into another place. So once you give people the opportunity to do what they love, they will do it 24/7 because it's their passion. They are glucose monitoring, because you know, when you have a problem with glucose and you have diabetics, so usually also you have usually inflammation. And if you have chronic inflammation, this is the main reason for all the chronic diseases. It's horrible. So they have this secret plan that they put on the table and everybody knows, which is, we are going to create the best glucose monitoring. We're going to lower the prices, and then we're going to create a much better ones and sell them. So these people believe that if you take such good people, you should let them work. They say, we hire the best people in order to give them the opportunity to do deep work. So first of all, they are not allowed to have more than 4 meetings a week, and none of them is for more than an hour. And each of the employees can say, I'm not available. They are supposed to answer to things that are written, but then they can simply sign, I'm busy, I'm doing deep work.
So Yali, you know, amazing insights. I'm going to adopt some of what you're saying and pass it on also to my teams. But just a quick expert tip from your perspective, what is the most valuable piece of advice that you would give to the leaders navigating the space of exponential technologies?
I think radical empathy before anything else. You have to understand that your people are going through a transaction. Try to put yourself in their shoes. It's always impossible, but you can, you know, simulate in your head that similar situation and see how can you create the road better for them and try to do it with them. Don't make the decision. Sit with them. Move for thinking about count of heads to count of heart. So whenever you keep people this way, in this way, you're going to get much more. So I think radical empathy for your clients, for your suppliers, even for your competitors in a sense, because then perhaps you can create new alignment, that a new relationship that you never even think that you can create. So I think the other E, go to the edges. Put very good people at Jesus and tell them, teach us. You should learn all the time and all the time, you know, be capable of questioning your own thoughts. All the time. Work with polaric thinking, you know, okay, entrepreneur, but can it be totally different? And once you start telling yourself that there is a different version and a third version and a fourth version of any situation, you're going to find good solution, because we are going to have now the best tools in the world ever that humanity had. So there is no reason why we can't dream our most adventurous dreams, our biggest dreams for every company. So take the tools and look at all your value chain with the radical empathy and with all the tools, and you're going to recreate your own company, which is going to be 10 times better, but also 10 times bigger and more profitable. So I think this is what I would do before anything else.
Thank you, Yali. Radical empathy, I love it. So with that, you know, I want to say thank you, Yali,
My pleasure.
So much for this insightful discussion. It was so inspiring to hear you, and we can take so many of the things that you've talked about today. I truly appreciate your time and your energy in this discussion today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Live amazing, do amazing.